This is one in a series of podcasts from the Hyatt Webb Conference in Austin, 2011.
All right, folks, we're going to get started. And I've lost track. This is so sick. Let me introduce Kevin Prentice. Kevin has been with us before. He was the Red Stapler winner back 2 years ago when he gave the first version or first edition of this talk. Just a little backstory. About a month before the conference in Milwaukee, I was talking about Pekachka presentations where you do 20 slides in 20 seconds, and it's time, so it changes every 20 seconds. I give Kevin full credit because he actually took up my challenge and did a Pekachka presentation that was good enough to win that Red Stapler Award. So I'm really looking forward to this. Just to give you an idea, we had somebody come up right before the start of this asking Kevin if this is going to be awesome. Kevin was too modest to answer that question. I will answer it for him. I am expecting this absolutely to be awesome. So, Kevin, not to put any pressure on you,
with
no further ado, Kevin Prentice from Red Rover.
Thank you. Yeah, that's good. That's my favorite in the intro. Build you up on a pedestal so there's only one place to go. Ah, yes. So how many of you are new to Hyatt Webb? There were a lot in orientation. Raise your hand if you're new to Hyatt Webb. Wow, look around. Give him a round of applause. Welcome to Hyatt Webb. That's fantastic. It's a really great community, as you're seeing. So this is about tying it all together. It's the story of innovation in higher education. It's the story of innovation in higher education told through my experiences of the last 2 years. The presentation that Mark just referenced was a future forward, isn't it going to be great when social media and higher education work like this kind of presentation? It was a vision. So this story is about what happens next. So this is checking back in. This is chapter 2 because innovation takes a long time, so who knows how many chapters there are going to be. So for those of you who are not new and who saw that presentation, there will be a little bit of review to catch up everybody else. We obviously want to welcome people, and then I'll take it forward from there. So unfortunately, the story of innovation starts with some bad news. We're going to hit $1 trillion in student debt next month. Colorado's going to slash its higher ed budget by half. An authority no less than Seth Godin says that there's too much middle market product in higher education that's undifferentiated, so this combination of too much student debt and dramatically rising prices is going to cause a higher education meltdown. If you read all these in quick succession, you can very easily get a sense of doom that settles in nicely right about here. And in fact, higher education is most certainly doomed if we let the future happen to us. That's how it works. That's what reaction is all about. So I'm here this morning to present an alternative vision that looks like this.
Yeah! Rainbows and unicorns!
Visionary leadership is about chasing things that are not there yet. Things that would be magical and awesome if they were. Visionary leadership is about we choose to go to the moon, not because it's easy, but because it's hard. Because doing so will marshal our absolute best. Because that's what's worth doing. Now, right now, technology is going to be the thing that either changes or saves higher education. Which is good news for you, because technology is your medium, which means that this is your moment. And this is your opportunity to do something visionary and pursue collectively some sort of innovation. Now, history has some lessons about innovation. There was a time when flight was the unicorn of its day. It was theoretically possible, but it hadn't been done yet. Otto Lilienthal was a researcher in Germany studying birds and trying gliders, and he said, "The trick is, even though the theory is possible, it's in the practice that the learning happens. It's in the difficulty that the learning happens. The key is to try something." 2 weeks after he said this, Otto was killed in a glider crash. Innovation is not for the faint of heart, but we have to try things. It's the way it goes. It's the only way we can possibly make progress. And starting from, excuse me one moment. Starting from good theory is the key. So let's talk about dance floors as a way to get to the theory. And it goes like this. How many of you have ever been to a dance? Raise your hand if you've ever been to a dance. How many of you have been to a good dance? How many of you have been to a bad dance? Right, and the hands go up faster. Here's how it works. If I were to ask 100 people on the street what makes a bad dance, 99 of 100 people would say the DJ. They blame the DJ. They always blame the music. But, ladies, this is how you work. Absolutely. When you go out, you form a circle with your good group of friends. And if the girls are good enough friends, it does not matter at all what the DJ plays. The DJ can play the worst song in the whole wide world. I like big butts and I cannot lie. And you'll be like, oh yeah, doing your thing. Robin, for sure, I've seen it happen multiple times. Tim Neckritz, MC Hammer, just wait for it. Just wait, if we can be so blessed. Maybe, just maybe, it's not about the DJ. Maybe it's about the connections. Maybe it's about the circle of friends. Maybe that's actually more important determining states of engagement on dance floors. Imagine yourself hovering above a dance floor like this. You could see the state of engagement. You would immediately see that fives tend to congregate in the middle, people that are the most engaged. They stand the closest together. They produce the most energy. Way towards the edge, you have lots of people standing farther apart with their arms crossed, typically making fun of the people in the center. We've all been there. We all know what this feels like. This is a human thing. This is how we do it. You've all been to good dances. You've been to bad dances. A good dance looks like this. A bad dance looks like that. Here's the challenge. College campuses and dance floors work the exact same way. National Student Survey of Engagement says that 60% of students will never participate in a college-sponsored activity the entire time they're at school. We have college campuses where 60% of the people aren't dancing. They're bad dances. At a two-year school, the number is 84%, and that's why we have a 30% dropout rate on average in the first year. Because our dances just aren't engaging enough. So how do we go from that to that? How do we go from bad to good? Here's the move. Hey, my name's Kevin. And your name is?
Carlin.
Carlin, nice to meet you. Hi, I'm Kevin.
I'm Meg.
Meg, great to meet you. Meg, have you met Carlin?
No.
Why don't you just pretend for a second? Everybody repeat after me with your right hand up like this. Have you met? Complete inclusivity for the lefties in the room. One more time. Left hand up. Repeat after me. Have you met? That's the move. It's real simple. It's far more effective than actually switching up the music. And it works great at Hi-Ed Web. Try it here, too. It works in real life. So it goes like this for you visual learners. Hi, nice to meet you. Have you met? That's the move. Because if you do that, then you get this. And then you get this. More people show up, you get that. And this is what a great dance floor looks like. This is what Hi-Ed Web looks like after 3 days. This is why it's a great conference. Just to review, yes and no. On the right, you have massive redundancy. On the left, you have a single point of failure and a massive ego. This is bad social media on the left-hand side. This is what we're living for. This is the trend of all history. From technology 1.0, broadcast media, publishing in the New York Times, to Twitter 2.0. It drives me absolutely crazy still to this day. Yes, your school has to have a Twitter feed. Yes, your school has to have a Facebook fan page. But just look at the difference here. Having a Twitter account for the school and using it to broadcast message is using a 2.0 tool with 1.0 thinking. We have to move to this, where we're actually connecting students to students, students to faculty, students to alumni, everyone to everyone. That's what makes a great dance. This is scalable. This is a business model that survives change. This is not scalable. This is not a business model that survives change. This is Gaddafi. This is Tahrir Square. See where I'm going? Students need connections. They need connections first and foremost to people who are like them so that they can feel comfortable. That's the base of the pyramid. They need people who like what they like. They need people who also like chess, who are not like them in any other way, but they happen to like chess. That's how they get the diversity. That's where the growth comes from. And critically, they need people who care about what they're doing. They need an audience that cares. To get to this one, think about it from the perspective of a dance floor. If you had a great dance, and you took the fours and threes and twos and ones and made them disappear, the fives would stop dancing immediately. People need an audience. Everybody needs an audience. Think about it from the perspective of all the different campus departments. It's connections, 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 it's connections. Admissions wants to connect with authentic students who are just like them, who are successful at your school. Orientation wants to connect with people in the residence halls, ambassadors, whoever it is. Involvement wants to connect them with that chess club, study groups with the people that care about the academic interests that they have just as much as they do. Career services to the potential jobs they didn't even know they could have. Alumni, people to be mentored, people to be mentors of. It's connections, it's connections, it's connections. This is the unicorn, the system that can get to know a student over the system or systems that can get to know a student and make those have you met connections as they move through their experience with school. That's what's theoretically possible. That's what we're trying to build. That is the unicorn. And that's where you come into play, because Hyatt Web does this wonderfully. You're critical to this. First and foremost, you have the tools. You're not scared of the technology. That's actually a big differentiator these days. Secondly, you do this on a regular basis. I have yet to meet this person. Heavy Winter, are you in the room? Hey, so Heavy Winter. I'm Kevin. Good to meet you. Hey, I'm Kevin. Andrew, have you met Heavy Winter?
We did.
Just making sure. This is what's normal at Hyatt Web. Somebody pops up and says, hey, I'd like to meet these people. And I say, great, I would like to meet you too. And then he says up on top, so you're the person who reads my blog, because they did. I clicked through his Twitter and I read his blog and it was great stuff. And I said, yeah, absolutely. And he said, I like your ideas too, I would like to chat. All I'm saying, the only unicorn that I want to build with you guys, is a system that gives students an experience like this every single day at college. Hey, I'm like you. I'm excited about what you're excited about. I want to get together in person so that we can learn, so that we can grow, so that we can build community. That's what's exciting to me. If only the line from theory to practice was straight, it would be so easy. But it looks like this. And it feels like this. Flying's going to be awesome. Oh. But that's the learning moment. That moment's absolutely necessary to go there, as long as it's shared, as long as it doesn't happen in the quiet. And that's why I'm here, to share this. Because this is what enables the Wright brothers 9 years later to take off. They credit Otto with all the research that they needed to make it happen. So, you know, we'll get there together. Here's what Red Rover did. We launched at University of Wisconsin-Madison. We launched a simple directory that had tags. I'll come back to that, so this will be a theme. It worked really well. They replaced their interest survey. And then we lost our stakeholder. She left her job. She had the vision. She believed in it, and she left her job. And then we got replaced by Collegiate Link, because Wisconsin-Madison decided that solving the pain of paperwork around student groups was more pressing than the opportunity of increasing engagement at Madison. That's the choice they made. We launched at New Mexico State University. Same thing. Six months later, we lost our primary stakeholder, and then there were brutal budget cuts in New Mexico State University, not unusual, and we got cut there after the first year, the same program. I want to be clear. I'm not blaming higher education or these people or these institutions for doing anything wrong. There's tons of things that we did not do well. There's tons of things. It was a new endeavor, but this is where we were in the learning moment. Here's the lessons that we learned. So the good, right? Directories. Directories are massively underutilized for making those connections. They're not perfect, but there's a couple of small tweaks that you can make that make a big difference. Simple, 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 really smart, and super useful. It goes like this. Students love people like you over the summer. Send them an email that says, hey, you can meet people like you at this school. If you can deliver on it with a directory, they don't need too much functionality to actually deliver on that promise. All you need are simple tags. I'll come back to that. Students are happy to connect their social media. 2 years ago, there was a ton of concern about, will students be comfortable connecting their Facebook, or will they be comfortable connecting their Twitter? The answer is yes. The adoption rates, when we give them a profile and we say, here's the slot where you put your Twitter, they do it at the same rates that students adopt Twitter in general. So absolutely, they're totally comfortable sharing that as an expression of their identity. Students love tag shopping. Giving them a list of the interests that are available with the other students or the other faculty on the campus, and they will click away and add tags to themselves. It's really a fun game for them. That was one of the most successful things that we did inside of an interface, and I'll show you what that looks like. Insights from tags are super powerful. At San Antonio College, they found out that 12% of their incoming class was interested in golf, and they didn't have a golf group. So then they sent an email to those people saying, hey, have you met, you're all golfers. They made a golf team, and then they went to state the following year. an amazing opportunity that came from introducing students to each other using technology. I'm not talking about social media with this unicorn. I'm talking about social architecture, using the data that's available and the technology that's available to get better outcomes systematically for students. The last one that's really simple inside of this is tagging communication increases open rates in emails. So if you send a student an email and you say, hey, because you're interested in golf, you're getting this communication from somebody about golf, they'll open it at 3 to 4 times the rates of other subject lines that are available. Because you're expressing care by telling them, hey, I'm trying to be relevant based on what you told me. So these are what we learned. Directory, making those little tweaks, adding that functionality to your directory makes a big difference. It's really worth doing. It's not very hard. Then we made a mistake and we went a step further with something that worked but was dangerous. Group recommendations. So the campus groups that exist on campus right now, by matching the tags that were in the directory to the tags that were in the groups, it increased involvement, initial involvement rates by about 80%, which was great. 36% involvement at a two-year college is about double the average rate according to the Community College Survey of Engagement. So that was exciting, but it led us down this road into group management software, which is a massive explosion of bureaucratic, it needs to have these 7 fields and these 9 pieces of functionality, and we got pulled away from innovation and all the things we wanted to do and into the old way that it needed to be done. That was that lesson. Said in another way, we started out with a directory that did a few things really well, and then we tagged on this group management software like a big old horse trailer and it nearly killed us. Or said yet another way, if this is vast and that's not vast, we ended up at half vast. Doing new things is inherently more complicated than doing old things. Complication comes with cost and time and money. That's just kind of how it works. I wish it didn't, but it did. So the learning, really, really simple. We learn small or large, but not half vast. That's what we learned. Going a little bit deeper into large, we thought it was about the technology. Because we're technologists, because we were so excited about the possibilities of what technology could do with the big data and the machine learning and all the stuff that we wanted to do, we neglected to account for all of the different process that needed to come in front of that technology, especially neglected to account for the fear. This was our biggest mistake in going out. Fear was insanely expensive in our process. It looked like customer support, customer support, customer support, hand-holding, late-night phone calls. It's going to be okay. We're going to be okay. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. It looked like one department not being able to communicate with another department because the other department said, you know, that's just too new and too scary. We're not going to do it. So we couldn't get past the initial stakeholders. This is just the struggle of innovation. Again, I don't mean to sound complainy. I just want to tell you how it works. So this was our path. This is what we spent a year doing. We did some soul searching at the end of last year, and we thought, we got 3/5 of a unicorn. What do we do with that? And it was a tough time, I'm not going to lie to you. It's a little disappointing when you find yourself in Otto's position. Then I did a presentation to a large multinational corporation. And I said, Web 1.0, Web 2.0, and peer-to-peer learning. And they said, oh my gosh, the guy literally pounded on the table. We want it. And I'm like, well, that's fine, but it's not for you. It's for higher education. And he said, no. I don't care. We have the exact same problem. We have tons of people on our dance floor across our global corporation that are not engaged. Our best knowledge is trapped inside the heads of our people. If we could connect them to each other where everyone could be a teacher and they could all teach each other, we would get massive knowledge transfer. We'd get massive employee retention. We'd be really good at recruitment. That would make a big difference in our bottom line. By the way, we spend $1.5 billion on our people. If we could just twist that by 4 to 5% more effectively, we'd pay some money for that. Would you pay a lot of money for that? So, Red Rover made a choice a year ago to work with corporations. Felt a little like selling out, but it was the right thing to do if we want to build a unicorn. And the good news that I get to come here and tell you today is guess what? Guess what, higher ed? Corporate America's going to buy you a unicorn. But just the technology, not the process. Just the tech, not the process. We don't have the process figured out. We just have the tech. So this is the conversation around innovation. I'm not really sure what to do with it. I'm interested in talking about it. I know that for most of you on most campuses, especially Army of One, small schools, budgets, it's like you're not in an innovative mindset. I get it, I know. And some of you, Dylan, I think, was saying that his team is doing 20% innovation time. That's great. I think that's rare. But I know I want to talk about the big next thing. I want to make the big thing happen. That's just our nature. But I want to just leave you with the simple stuff. So I do want to go back to the directory. What's the simple, cheap thing that you can do right now? You can build this or you can buy this. It's simple. It doesn't do much, but it does it really well. Michael Staten's taking pictures of it so he can jack it. Interest, right here. That's the key. That's it. It's just tags. Just add that to whatever profile you have. You can totally do this in Drupal or BuddyPress or whatever you want. Just add tags. It's really simple. Because now you're changing the use cases of your directory from I'm searching for somebody I know whose contact information I forgot, which frankly is not particularly useful when it comes to the educational context for a new student, to I'm looking for someone that matches this attribute who's also interested in chess, who's also interested in calligraphy. Well, suddenly that's a really interesting use case for any student. And then you can do tag matching if you want, where you can get people to say, you can sort your find people page or your people page by similar interests, so people can get, have you met, across these interests. Because then if you can get, once you have those tags, the next use case to add on top, and then stop here, because beyond here is doom. but do this. Just go this far. Once you have these tags, you can let your admins sort. So the people in this residence hall who are interested in movies, I want to send a message to just those people so that students can get relevant communication from your administration. And your directory can now be very useful with 3 or 4 brand new use cases with only a couple of features that you've added. Again, build this or buy this. It's really, really pretty straightforward. But I do like unicorns. So here's what we built with the corporation last year. Addition, start out with the same directory, but now when they attach the social media, we built a feed aggregation engine so that when they attach external services, things like Facebook or Twitter or YouTube or whatever else, and internal services, things that are attached, like student information systems, collaboration spaces, e-portfolios, WordPress blogs, Confluence wikis, whatever you got, people can attach those to their profiles, and the aggregation system pulls it all into one giant, sortable, filterable, searchable database. So now inside of your search, students can search for something like web design, and they get an interface like this, where they're searching across all of the social media published by whoever is in the directory, faculty, staff, students, and alumni, everybody. And this is where it gets really fun, because go back to Danceforce. Now, on a web design, you see the top contributors to that topic across everybody, across the whole dance floor that's in the directory. You can see the fives, right? The people that are most engaged in the topic that you just told us is relevant to you. Then you get trending topics, so you can drill further into. What are the trending topics, live trending topics across all your social media for your whole school today, right? That's really fun. What's your school talking about on Twitter? Hashtags come up as tags. It pulls everything in. And you get a filterable saved search so that you as administrators or whoever you want to do this, you can say, I want everybody to have on their top channel their feed from their major because they can start out with their major. Or I want something for this special day. I'm going to do this hashtag, and now whoever wants to do add this hashtag to anything will be this live pulling feed from all across all the social media. Underneath the hood, where is Todd? In New York, they have this concept of being overexposed. It means when you go to the party early and stay late, you're overexposed. And Sanders is really good at avoiding being overexposed. At least in the ed sessions. Activity streams are under the hood. This is actually the biggest technical piece that's really, really important. So by harvesting the social media, what's this is a standard JSON format that breaks up streams into actor, verb, and object. When you start aggregating these different streams in one storage place, it gives you all kinds of amazing possibilities. Social media will start the feeds this way. The practice of getting things out of Banner and SunGuard and things like that will take a little more time, but the APIs are getting there. Start with the social media, because then you can build the analytics. Once you gather the activity streams, logging, reading, sharing, liking, checking in, commenting, posting, any verb you can think of, you can send into the system in an activity stream format. Then you do dashboards where you allocate points for those verbs. So blogging is worth 10 points, liking is worth 2 points across these different social media formats. Now you can do runtime scoring. So if you're adding up, a blog is worth 10 points. If you do 10 blogs, you get 10 points in that month. So 100 points is if level 5 engagement on the dance floor. 70 points is a level 4 engagement on the dance floor. You can actually model out the engagement of your entire campus. You can do the faceted search, drill into that. This is what corporate America is really excited about, because they're really interested in how's South America doing in this conversation? Who are the people that are talking about this topic that are really engaged in it? What's that curve actually look like? How do we bend that curve? Because we want more people talking about this topic. It's really fun. Again, social architecture, not social media. It's really more advanced. Having this sort of scoring system allows for stakeholder involvement because it's a really simple language around it. How's our school doing? The old way of measuring engagement on your campus is the National Student Survey of Engagement. It's a Likert scale. It's a self-reported Likert scale where the results come back 9 months later. You can't do anything about a self-reported Likert scale that comes back. The representational samples are 5%. This is the standard right now. 700 schools are paying $8,000 a year to this survey. Think about self-reporting Likert as an instrument just for a moment, right? How many times did you go to the gym last year? How many times are you going to go to the gym next year? How accurate are those two statements? Well, that's the best we've got. But this, real-time, actionable insight, is what's exciting to me. This is the unicorn. Because students need people like them. They need people who like what they like, and they need an audience. They need people to care. Because that's what's going to get them to start publishing their best. That's what's going to get them to come out of their shell. In the same way people at Higher Ed Web, some of you, I'm sure, in this room, come out of your shell at Higher Ed Web because you have an audience. The choice is pretty stark. It's going to take a while. It's not going to be a straight road. I'm excited to work on it with friends. And that's what I got. From here, it's just a conversation. I don't really know where it goes from here. It's kind of a weird vendor position, I know. But that's what I got. So what I'm hoping for, there are three main categories around this talk. There's the people stuff, how do people work? And dance floors kind of get out of it. There's the technology, what might these systems look like to do this sort of social architecture that's available to you, that you get, that you grasp conceptually in a way that most people on your campus won't, because you have the experience here. And then there's the, I don't know, let's call it business stuff. So does this ever apply to your campus? Does this make sense to your campus at all? Would you ever do this, yes or no? If you wanted to do it, would you build it in Drupal? Would you want to build it in BuddyPress? Would you want to buy it? How would you want to do it? So those are three categories of conversation. To kind of open it up, why don't we start at tables, just for like 2 minutes, and then we'll come up and do a back and forth so everybody can share. I'll give you a little mood music. Go for it.
I'll start, hi. So my question is, you know, I really strongly believe in all the community building when it comes to retention and those efforts at colleges, because I feel that's one of the big things that we're not tracking, and I love that you're looking at it and now applying analytics to look at some longitudinal stuff.
Yeah.
What is your thought with academics, you know, when it comes to higher ed? I mean, sort of the main purpose of going to college
is I've heard about that.
Right? So, I mean, I feel like this is an amazing model that helps with building student community, but do you see academics feeding into this, or that's a separate thing to measure success, measure engagement, you know, with faculty and student interactions?
Yeah. So this is, I mean, unicorns, I don't know that they ever get entirely done, so this is a big vision. But the way that we're thinking about it, the way that we're playing with it, is that you add a hashtag to yourself, so #CRN123, now you're in a group with a class, and you've got a live back channel, you know, back and forth type of interface. So we can track that for engagement. That could be fed into a system like Moodle. Most of these new LMSs, I know Blackboard just announced at EDUCAUSE that they now get social, which I haven't looked at, but I'm highly skeptical of. So they're going to have more and more plugins where they're trying to port content in and out. And the new vendors like Instructure, which are awesome, by the way. Instructure, if you don't know them, you have to check them out. They're absolutely incredible. Are all API-ing up right? So I don't. This isn't one system. This is a bunch of systems doing what they do well. And so I think there are copyright types of things around the LMS that we don't want to touch, because you know we already touched the hot stove a couple times. And the faculty adoption thing is another thing that we don't want to touch. So I'm excited about informal social learning context online. I think that's what's crackable in the near term. And I do think that that's portable with APIs into LMSs. If that 3% of cutting edge professors that will play with tools, play with that, we'll make it easy for them. Great question though, thank you.
So yeah, we were talking a little bit and it kind of stems from this, like, what do we do? You know, there's a portal project going on. Why would students want to go to a portal?
Yep.
And Daryl, is it? Works. By the way, have you met Daryl? Damon, sorry.
I have now.
To my point. So,
yeah.
Who is he? Is he Daryl or is he Damon? So how do you know who these people are? So they're in Facebook or there's like a site you like or RefWorks where people are sharing things they're reading in the library, and they say, I'm interested in this topic, I'm interested in this author. There's all this data already out there. Students are already supplying it.
Yep.
So how does this infrastructure work? So do you have to drive them to a particular interface? You're saying no because there are APIs. But how do you trace them through all of these different services?
Right. So that's the activity stream. And actually, it's the same exact situation in corporate America. They've got tons of Thomson Reuters, for instance. We had a long conversation with them. They purchased 15 companies in the last however long. So every one of those companies is using some different communication, wiki, Confluence, forum, chat, whatever, bookmarking, something or other system. And so by replacing the directory and having it be a meta directory, where the question is, what services do you actually use? It's really neat. It makes each one of their people a librarian for the content that they care about. And all they need to do to categorize that is attach it to their own profile. And then we harvest whatever API, we harvest whatever activity streams are available. So now we are beholden a little bit to the activity stream. Sometimes in the case of a blog, we'll get, David posted a blog, and we'll get the content of that blog. Some activity streams, just based on their XML, will just say, we know that it posted a blog, but we don't really know what's in it. Facebook does that quite a bit. They'll hold on to some key data. It's Facebook, what are you going to do? But for the most part, those APIs are conquerable. You know, when you get enough people to say, yes, this is a system we care about, we're big believers in don't replace anything that's working. Don't ask users to change the interface from the one they want. Just aggregate the information from the places that they actually use it. Does that answer the question?
I was talking to somebody earlier, and I don't know any numbers on this, but we right now use Facebook group for your freshman class, and
yep.
I was thinking about possibly using Ning, use Facebook login to, you know, pull in their info and that, and I had heard, don't do that. You know, nobody wants to have that extra network you have to be a part of.
Yep.
How do you make this not become an extra thing on top of the Facebook, where they're already spending their whole day?
Yep.
How do you make this the thing that they can really grab onto?
Yeah. I think that's one of the biggest questions for sure. And that goes back to a process and adoption. The yet another network syndrome, YANS, like that's the thing, right? So it goes a little bit back to they don't have to. So if they're just aggregating it, if they're just logging in once, they're setting up the directory, students will do pretty much, I don't mean, this sounds belittling, but I don't mean it this way, they'll do pretty much anything you ask of them in the summer before they start school. And then once they start school, they stop opening their email because they get spam like crazy, and then they stop doing anything that you ask of them, and that's the state of affairs for the rest of the time. So you've got a little window of adoption there where you can get them set up in the directory, you can start harvesting the feeds, and then you just bend the curve over time. This isn't intended to be a social network. This is intended to be a connection place. So around Facebook in particular, Facebook is incredibly powerful and does these great things, and students absolutely spend a lot of time on it. And so it's easy, I think, to go to, well, let's go where they are. And I think Facebook pages, for the most part, do that pretty well. I feel strongly that there's an ethical responsibility for higher education to move students from social context in Facebook into a professional context and give them a chance to be semi-public. So I think that for the students that are ready, sharing blogs and sharing tweets and connecting around that or connecting to alumni on LinkedIn, those are all important patterns for their success in life, and I think that's what schools need to do. I feel like going too far into Facebook is like moving the school into the mall. That gets weird.
Yeah,
Yep. So then this is, I don't want it to be like a this is our feature sort of thing. But the pattern that you want to go for if you're gonna build this kind of thing is absolutely you need newsletters that go out once a week and then every other week. Every other week is the right pattern during the school year. And it has to be just, you said this, so you're getting this. The second you change your mind, just click here to change your mind. Not a big deal. So you said you're interested in chess. We're telling you about this guy that's blogging about chess on campus, who's in your residence hall. There you go. You know, so that the pattern can be really lightweight. I really like the feel in general of Mint, for anybody that's on mint.com. Every Friday, so I hook up my credit cards. It does the same sort of stuff. It's reading the backgrounds, figuring out where I'm spending money. Every Friday, it tells me how much money I don't have. That's really great, because it makes me feel responsible. And the second I know, the second I get that email, if I want to go see what my money is doing, if I want to go be a little more responsible, I know I can log in. And so that's we're not trying to compete on a daily basis with Facebook. That's the social belonging layer. That's going to be huge, you know, well into their 20s as far as their psychological needs. Anybody else? All right. Well, thank you very much. Oh,
you asked about the sponsorship of the. You talked about your key stakeholders, and when key stakeholders leave, that didn't always go well.
Mm, yeah.
So, I mean, I'm a programmer on a creative team, which is a little bit like a fish out of water, anyway.
Yeah.
And I don't have a whole lot of who's the stakeholder? If I think this is the direction, that would be great for the institution, for connection, and for those things.
Yep.
What kind of stakeholder would you suggest to be able to push that forward, to be able to get the right resources, not just money, but people's time or
yep.
effort behind
yeah.
it?
Yeah, totally. Thank you. So I'm not 100% sure. I don't know exactly the right pattern yet. But what I'm clear on is that the web team can do a great directory, and that can be great. You don't need to do any change management to do a better directory to offer that service to people. It's useful enough. They'll pick it up, and off they go. No big deal. Partner with orientation. Say, here it is, and that's it. You know, just let them know. For the bigger sorts of change, you have to start at the top. And so whatever top is for you, depends on the size of school. So that's why, you know, for unicorns, It's gonna be a few schools. It's gonna be a long conversation. You're gonna be it with friends. So if you're interested in this, we want to talk. If you're working on this, we want to talk. We're gonna be open sourcing some of the deeper technology behind it. So if you've got Drupal front ends and WordPress front ends, a lot of this is tied in with WordPress. We just want to play. You know, we want to get there. We want to get there together, and you know, a little help from your friends. Thanks.